Part 3, Chapter 3, The Rat Race and the Bat House. When Rowan and I received word from the Grenada Cabinet that they had approved our proposal to establish a Christian radio station on the island of Ikaruku, we immediately began preparing to move to Grenada. We began loading a 40-foot container with the equipment, the sections of a 280-foot tower, a small truck, building supplies, and personal effects the Lord had already provided. The container was shipped to Grenada, and we flew to Antigua on June 3, 1988. We were met by the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse staff and taken to our little home on the village of Johnson's Point. Our dear Miss Maggie was waiting for us. She had cleaned the house for us, but it did not stay that way very long. We started organizing and packing the next morning. The rat race had begun. Roland went to town and bought lumber for crates. He also arranged for a 20-foot container to be brought out to the Johnson's Point so we could pack our things in it. The ship was scheduled to sail to Grenada with a container 3 weeks later. We would never have made it without the wonderful help of our son Jonathan, who flew in from the USA on the 11th, and the Radio Lighthouse staff. They all worked hard to help us get everything packed and loaded into the container, while Roland built crates for our furniture, etc. It was an exhausting time, up at 5:30 a.m. and working until midnight. But the Lord helped us, and we made it in time for the container to sail with the ship. Praise the Lord. June 15th, we were on Liat, Leeward Islands Air Transport plane, all day until we reached the little island of Caruku. We island hopped from Antigua to Guadeloupe, Dominica, to Martinique, and on to Barbados. In Barbados, we had to claim our baggage and pay to have it rolled out to the street and into the other side of the terminal, where we stood in line at the Liat gate to get back on board the same plane. In Antigua, they told us we could not check our baggage all the way through to Caruku, because we would have to change planes. We flew on to Caruku via Mustique and Union Island, arriving in Caruku at 3:45 p.m. When we checked with immigration in Caruku, they gave us 1 week to stay on the island. The young man said Roland would have to fly to Grenada to get an extension of time. Ours was the last flight into Caruku for the day, and the customs agents had already gone home. We were waiting for them to clear our baggage, which was still on the cart. But when no one came to examine it, we just picked it up and loaded it into a taxi and went to town, Hillsboro. We found Senator Bernard Bullen and got the house keys from him, went home to the big old frame house, and began unpacking and getting settled. The taxi returned to take us to supper at Camp Caruku, now called Casada Bay Resort. Camp Caruku had been where some of the Cuban soldiers had camped during the Revolution. The food was good at the resort, and the price was reasonable. We slept well that night, although the breeze almost blew us away. The next day, we caught a bus to town to buy groceries and set up a personal bank account and an account for the radio station, the Harbor Light. We were told we would have to give them a letter of introduction from a respected person there in Caruku. Mr. Bullen was happy to do that for us. We had two pieces of mail waiting for us at the post office. One was a cassette tape of a service from Hampton Park Baptist Church, so so we used that for our church service on Sunday. While we were in town, Roland called our friend Mr. Bailey in Grenada to check on our container from the USA. He said the container had arrived on the 8th, and he wanted Roland to come over to Grenada on Monday to help with the details of customs. Saturday, I washed clothes by hand. No washing machine available yet. That was in the container from Antigua. We received some surprise guests. Two friends from Antigua, Heidi and Charlie, came to spend the weekend with us in Carriacou. Company arrived before we had been in Carriacou 3 days. They came to attend the funeral of their boss in Antigua, a native of Carriacou. We learned later most kayaks, as people are called in Carriacou, wanted to be buried back home in Carriacou. Charlie cooked Sunday morning breakfast for us, an Antiguan breakfast with salt fish, cucumber salad, and hot bread. Before we had our church service, by listening to that tape from Hampton Park Baptist Church, Heidi and Charlie went to the funeral, and we all relaxed Sunday afternoon. We asked Charlie and Heidi how they had slept the night before, and Charlie said, "We were terrorized by the bats." "Bats?" we said. "We didn't know there were any bats in the house." Well, more on that later. Monday morning, Roland, Heidi, and Charlie took the bus to the Carriacou Airport at 5:30 a.m. and flew to Grenada. Heidi and Charlie stayed at the airport in Grenada since they were on their way back to Antigua. Roland took a taxi from Grenada Airport to Winter Rest Guest House, had breakfast, and then went to town with Mr. Bailey. They first visited the cabinet secretary, who called the Ministry of Finance and Immigration. Neither of them had received the communication she had sent days before. She gave the man a sealed copy of the duty-free approval to take to the Ministry of Finance. The lady in the finance office told them to come back at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. She said she could not see them before then. Roland and Mr. Bailey worked on port clearance. The port manager was quite helpful, allowing them to proceed with import entries. But he informed them the truck would have to be cleared separately. He allowed them to take the duty-free approval to be photocopied for him, so they made an extra copy for the arms board. While Mr. Bailey went to meet a cruise ship, Roland went to the Botanical Gardens government offices to see the lands officer because he could inform him which land in Carriacou was government land. He told him his office was at the top of a steep hill in the Tempe area. After a hot dog and a bit of rest, Roland climbed the hill only to find out the man was not in. He also found the office of the Ministry of Works, but the minister only came to the office on Thursdays and Fridays. Mr. Bailey returned and met Roland at the Ministry of Finance at 3 p.m., as instructed by the lady there, but she had not returned. The clearing process stopped right there, except they did get a customs office at the port to evaluate the truck, which he could not see. It was still in the front of the container behind everything else. Tuesday morning, the rat race continued. Roland went first thing to license and register the truck, which had to be done before it could leave for Carriacou. He had to pay tax, although it was duty-free. He also had to pay for the license, inspection, and registration, as well as insurance. The licensing department had not received the duty-free approval from the cabinet, but a messenger finally brought it to them. All of this took until nearly noon. The next thing on the agenda was to get the container released by the shipping company. The agency in Grenada for the U.S. shipping company had not received the original bill of lading, and they would not release the container until they had that in hand. Roland decided to call the shipping company in Jacksonville, Florida, and ask them to give authority to the local company to release the shipment. Roland was put on hold for 10 to 15 minutes and then told that the lady would call back. He waited 1.5 hours for her to call. He then ran through a heavy downpour of rain to another office where a lesser official said she had called them, but they must wait for a telex she was sending. Roland explained the urgency of needing to unload the container onto the eastward ship that afternoon before customs closed so it could sail the next morning. Finally, the big man stamped the okay for the release on the strength of the phone call. Roland and Mr. Bailey rushed over to the port with the release, only to find out we owed over $400 US for storage fees on the container, which had arrived 2 weeks previously. They also wanted money to truck the container to the wharf, but Mr. Bailey threw up his hands and told them about all the fees we had paid already. Time was running out, so without delay, they drove the container over to the ship and began unloading it, finally. All the men on board the ship helped, including Mr. Bailey and the ship's captain. Everything was loaded onto the ship by 6 p.m., except our little truck, which they parked at Mr. Bailey's company overnight. They went back to Winter Rest Guest House, tired, but with the load on the ship, ready to sail next morning. Roland praised the Lord for his help and strength to get through the rat race of the day. Wednesday, Roland had to take the truck insurance to the licensing department and do something about immigration. Our 1 week was up that day. The chief immigration officer had not received the cabinet okay. Sound familiar? So Roland called the cabinet secretary again. She was shocked immigration had not received word. She said that she would call them. So Roland walked back to the immigration office on the opposite side of the carenage after talking to the captain of the eastward. The captain had told him the ship was to leave at exactly 10 a.m. Roland watched across the bay as the crew loaded our truck onto the ship. At 9:40 a.m., they still had not received word from the cabinet secretary. So a nice, friendly immigration officer began writing up a 2 week extension for our stay. At 9:45 a.m., the eastward blew the horn. The officer worked on Jonathan's passport first, and at 12 minutes to 10, the messenger from the Botanical Gardens, 2 blocks away, shuffled in with the envelope from the cabinet secretary. It seemed like they took an eternity to read the short note. At 9:50, the horn blew again. The officers nodded their heads approvingly as they read and stamped in our passport the condition under which the holder was allowed to land in Grenada on 15th June 1988 is hereby varied to permit the holder to remain in Grenada as long as he remains involved with a Christian radio station on Karaku. Wow. Praise the Lord. That was a better status than we could have hoped for. The horn blew again. It was 9:55. Roland thanked the immigration officers, threw the passports in his attaché, ran full tilt all the way around the carenage and boarded the eastward which immediately pulled away. Are you tired from hearing this account? I'm tired from reading it and writing it. Rowan enjoyed a pleasant voyage for the 28 miles up the coast of Grenada and on out into the open sea toward Carriacou. One spot was rougher than the rest of the journey, a spot which the Grenadians call Kick'em Jenny. The captain explained that the Atlantic and the Caribbean Sea came together at Kick'em Jenny, and there was not room for them both. However, we later learned an active underwater volcano was at that spot. When we flew over that area another time, the volcano was stirring the water up and boiling. The ships were instructed to sail 5 miles out from that spot. The fishermen joked about catching boiled fish. The captain told Roland the charge for carrying the contents of a 40-foot container was usually $10,000 EC, about $4,000 US. But he would let us have it for 8,000 EC, about $3,000 US. This included labor at the wharf on both ends. The Eastward landed at the Hillsborough Jetty on Carriacou 3.5 hours after leaving St. George's Grenada. The duty-free permission, along with lists, had somehow already arrived on Carriacou, so landing the ship was not a problem. 3 big truckloads and 2 trips with our little Ford truck got everything to the front yard of our house. We were careful not to open anything until the customs officer could come and inspect everything. Roland could not find him that afternoon, so he went to his office Thursday morning. He was a friendly man. "I'm glad that a Christian station will be built on Carriacou," he said. When Roland told him we built Caribbean Radio Lighthouse in Antigua, his face lit up with a big smile. He said, "My daughter and some nieces correspond with the Little Lighthouse Club." When Roland asked the customs officer about coming to our house to inspect or validate the shipment contents, he seemed embarrassed. "That won't be necessary at all. There's nothing to worry about. You don't need to pay duty, but just the stamp fee, which is 1.5% of the value, $544.40 EC, or $210 US. We were very glad our son Jonathan could come to Carriacou with us. He was a great help unloading the trucks, putting the things in place in the house, organizing things, etc. We were slowly getting things in their places in the house, getting the harbor light office set up, etc. During all this, we fought the battle with the rats and the bats. These long-time inhabitants of the old house were not easily evicted. The bats flew in and out of the upstairs at night. There was no screening at first, and they terrorized our first guests when they were with us. They hardly slept the first night because they had closed their windows and the bats did not know how to get out. They kept flying around the room above their heads. They were probably flying around our heads, too, but we were so exhausted we did not know anything about it. After that, Mr. Bullen had one of his men fix screens for the windows. The screens in our bedroom closed over the outside hole where the bats were accustomed to living, and in their confusion, they started pouring into the open ventilation window above the bedrooms. The bedrooms were full of bats searching for their home. They could not get back out because of the new screens in the windows. When they got tired of flying around, they collapsed on the floor, on the bed, or wherever. That night and the next, Jonathan put on gloves and captured 19 bats by hand, killed them, put them in plastic bags, and carried them out to the trash barrel. Roland and Jonathan worked until midnight, closing all the holes in the wooden walls that they could find, so no more bats could get in. In the middle of the night, Roland jumped out of bed and switched on the light. He frightened me. "Honey, what's wrong?" I asked sleepily. "Two bats decided my pillowcase made a nice place to sleep. They started to move and woke me up," he said. "Some of the bats were trapped inside our bedroom wall, but we were not about to reopen the hole to let them out. More would just find their way back. Several bats died inside the wall after unsuccessfully fluttering and chirping, trying to get out. We had a nice aroma to put us to sleep at night. We knew it would eventually clear. After getting the ventilation windows closed and repairing a crack in our window, we knew of no more bats coming into the house. Meanwhile, the rat race was pretty much in evidence, too. The rats stole the cheese out of the traps without getting caught. When we got some rat poison, they carried it off to another part of the house, but still seemed to be around, sampling the food, chewing the Tupperware, etc. Finally, I went into the kitchen one morning and saw this cute little round gray thing sitting on top of the kitchen counter, with its tail curled around itself. It was still alive, but evidently not able to run away, so I guess the poison was doing its work. Roland got the broom and killed it. Needless to say, I thoroughly scrubbed the counter with Clorox. We hoped we were winning the war. Meanwhile, the old house was beginning to look and feel more like home as we put up curtains, etc. When the shipment from Antigua would arrive with the rest of our furniture, we would be able to finish getting settled. We thanked the Lord for all his help and strength in the rat race during this big move. Before we had been in Caracou very long, we received some good news from Jack Buttram, the president of our mission board, ARMS. He told us two couples had fulfilled the application requirements of the board and had been approved as appointees to the staff of the Harbor Light, Walter and Linda Robinson, and our son Randy and his wife Charlene Cornelius. They would be visiting churches to raise their support, and then come and join us in Caracou. Praise the Lord.